Funding for WBUR comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
John Fitzgerald Kennedy, in his inaugural address, 50 years ago next month. Those words have become such a part of the American consciousness, it's easy to forget that someone actually had to write the speech. But a new exhibit opening today at the JFK Presidential Library in Dorchester on the Kennedy inauguration gives us a glimpse into the process. Museum curator Stacy Bredoff shows us notes on the speech Kennedy took on one of those yellow legal writing pads.
We're looking at a page in the handwriting of John F. Kennedy, and it's the first page of a handwritten draft of his inaugural address. And you can see up at the top, it's dated January 17th, 1961, so it was just a few days before he was inaugurated. The first line says, "Inaugural is an end as well as a beginning," and so on.
You can also see the mind at work here, because he'd write something, he'd scratch it out, he'd try again, he'd make notes. There's a couple of arrows up there.
Yep. As you say, he's scratching out and rewriting, and there's just fragments of phrases. Just a little bit of a window into how it all came together.
The notepad also offers some insight into the long-standing debate over who actually wrote the inaugural address, Kennedy or his speechwriter, Ted Sorensen, who passed away just a couple of months ago. Thurston Clark has written a book on the subject. It's called Ask Not, The Inauguration of John F. Kennedy and the Speech That Changed America. We spoke with Clark, who called the speech a collaboration.
I think if you counted words, you would come up with that Sorensen had contributed more words than Kennedy. But if you looked at the passages that we still remember, then I think those are more Kennedy than Sorensen. And specifically, I'm talking about the let every nation know whether it wishes us well or ill, will pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe to assure the survival and success of liberty. That's Kennedy. The torch has been passed to a new generation as Kennedy. I make a case in my book that Ask Not is Kennedy. It's an idea, the Ask Not idea, that he developed throughout his campaign in extemporaneous speeches in Detroit and Alaska. And after he had expressed this idea in different ways, in different words, but sometimes using the word ask, Sorensen began to put it into his prepared speeches, this kind of idea. They were very intellectually promiscuous, these two men. I mean, Kennedy would say something extemporaneously, and it would turn up in a Sorensen speech that Sorensen would write for him. Kennedy would change it again. A couple of weeks later, you might see this phrase again in a speech that Sorensen was writing.
Let me ask you about the inaugural speech in terms of its endurance in our memories. Right after the address was given, Eleanor Roosevelt wrote a letter, Ernest Hemingway weighed in, both talking about how the speech inspired them that day. And yet, for many people, the speech still does the same this day. Why is that?
At the time, it spoke to the need in the country. I like to say that for a great speech, you need a great orator, you need a great occasion, which we certainly had, and you also need an audience that wants to hear what the president or what the orator is going to say. And in 1961, when Kennedy delivered that speech, the American people felt that they had lost their purpose. For last year, there had been all kinds of soul-searching in the popular magazines. There had been Eisenhower and the Rockefeller Foundation had conferences about the national purpose. People were worried that the United States had lost its way, had no purpose. And so that's what Kennedy spoke to. People wanted to be inspired, and so Kennedy inspired them. This was a president who was swinging for the fences. He didn't want to be a good president. He wanted to be a great president.
We mentioned a moment ago how Eleanor Roosevelt loved the inaugural address, but the truth is she was not always a Kennedy fan. In fact, Clark says she had despised JFK in the past, and he tells the story of what changed their relationship.
Her favorite granddaughter died in a riding accident, and Kennedy was supposed to see her 2 days later. He called, and he said, "Listen, why don't we postpone the meeting?" And this was in September of 1960, and she said, "No, please come. I know you have a busy schedule." About 2 days later, she was in Cleveland at a meeting of Citizens for Kennedy, going on and on about Kennedy and how much she supported him. And then she stopped and said, "That young man behaved with such sensitivity and compassion throughout the whole day. He gave me more comfort than anyone else around me. The manner in which he treated me won me over, as did the many things he told me he believed in."
One of the very meaningful letters that President Kennedy received in response to the inaugural address was from Eleanor Roosevelt. We're standing in front of it now in the new exhibit. Why don't you tell us about this?
Well, this is, as you can see, it's in her own handwriting. She wrote it January 29th, so it's just 9 days after the inauguration. She was actually in Washington and attended the inaugural ceremonies, and she was moved to write to the president. And she says, "I wanted to tell you how I felt about your inaugural address. I think gratitude best describes the sense of liberation and lift to the spirit which you gave. I have reread your words several times and am filled with thankfulness. May we all respond to your leadership and make your task easier. With all good wishes to you and your wife."
That letter from Eleanor Roosevelt, read by JFK Presidential Library curator Stacy Bredoff, is part of a new exhibit at the library in Dorchester. Opening today, it's called Passing the Torch, the Inauguration of John F. Kennedy.
With history the final judge of our deeds, let us go forth to lead the land we love, asking his blessing and his help, but knowing that here on earth, God's work must truly be our own.